Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Dance House Theatre, Manchester. Welcome a man who's been here a week waiting for this show. It's been terrible. It's Richard Herring! Oh, I can tell already you're much better than last week's audience. So, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, except at the Dance Hall Theatre, Manchester. Did I get it right? Dance House Theatre, Manchester. Just try and get it right. It's just polite. Just basic politeness. But I was hanging out down at the John Rylands Library just now. Some good manuscripts down there. And a lot of the guys there poring over those. They call it Rehulastapa Eekdutma. So, thank you. I've got nothing to tell you. It's been the most empty week I've had of my life. I probably moved some stones around. And I tell you that I know there'll be stone clearers listening at home to this stuff. I'm not the only one who does this. And I met another one today. Last week. And the problem is it's easy around the edge, right? Because you can just chuck the stuff to the edge, the stones to the edge. But what if when you're walking across the field, you can't throw the stones onto another bit of the field? That would be counterproductive. You can only carry about 5 or 6 stones. That's a very slow... People, stone clearers have been worrying about this conundrum for centuries. How are we... I've solved it. Take a bag. So it's a bag. I've got a bag. I carry a big bag of stones. And I've lost half a stone doing this. I'm telling you, which is ironic, isn't it? So it's... When you think about it, look, we're going to crack straight on. I will just remind you that emergency questions. Last week's audience didn't buy a single copy and sold one. Had to go back home, bring all 48 copies back this week. I hope it sells better after this week's show. This is available, gofasterstripe.com/EQ from Amazon if you want to help my ranking. I don't care that much about that. There's so many. There's questions for kids. There's questions for dates. Let's see what I can find for you quickly. Emergency questions for dates. this one isn't actually. I've turned another page. Are you the postman or the letterbox? I mean, that is a good. It's good to sort that out. Good to sort that out. What thing that you should regret do you not regret? It's a good question, isn't it? For a date, that's a good one. I regret never having sung Je Regrette Rien at karaoke. That is my regret. my one regret. So, we've got a fantastic guest for you. He's not from Manchester. He's come all the way from Canada just to do this gig. He's probably best known as for his appearance in Lottie Bear Shout, Good as Goals. Though he also played Glenn Wool in the short film Brothel. Will you please welcome Glenn Wool, ladies and gentlemen? How lovely to see you. Lovely. Sit down. And you can take your mic out and okay. Hold up to your mouth. Like
oh, wow. Is that how this works?
Looking very dapper. Things have changed.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling a bit... I'm starting to wear a suit jacket on stage now. Used to wear a leather vest, but that wasn't a joke.
So before we crack on, let's just get these credits out of the way. What was Lottie Bear Shout, Good as Goals all about?
Lottie
oh, sorry, yes.
Bear Shout was a cartoon that I voiced one of the... I played a teenage moose.
Now that's got to hurt.
Teenage
that you
Moose.
To
it was for a Disney cartoon, okay. And I was told that I needed to make the moose a little more manly. If you know what I'm, my moose was too gay.
Right.
Yeah. Disney's not about to push gay moose on any children. Just say that in your head. Try to envision that. But I won a BAFTA for that. We
did
won
you?
A BAFTA. Yeah, it won. Yeah. And then they didn't make it into a show after all that.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Because usually that credit is something that was not successful. And so I'm very upset that it's turned out to be, that my introduction thing has turned out to be the best thing you've done.
Actually, that's the least successful thing I've ever done. And it actually did win the BAFTA. If it had won a major award, maybe. Just a BAFTA, please.
And what was Brothel? What was, do you remember that you played yourself, I presume, or just someone with the same
Yeah, that was just a time in my life I'd like back. I didn't know they had a camera there. it was a short film that some Australian comedians made that they lived, and I think it was based on a true story. Their neighbors ran a brothel, and they lived in number 5, and the neighbors were in 5A, so they constantly had horny men showing up going, is this, no, you gotta go one over. And they said, you just have to knock on the door and ask if this is where Candy is or whoever. I didn't know they were going to say I was playing myself. They kept that secret.
That's good. So that's the kind of part I usually... The only parts I ever get asked to do are in short films where I'm paying some kind of pervert, usually with a prostitute, sometimes cutting off his penis. That's all I get.
That's your excuse for all the research, then?
It is. So... Well, it's been a little while since we've seen each other, and both of our lives have changed quite a lot. You are the wild, one of the wild men of comedy.
Yeah,
drug taking, womanizing.
Yes.
And now you've all settled down, and it's lovely.
Yeah, I still take drugs, but they're for my blood pressure. And all of that womanizing led to the fantastic woman. And we're going to be married, and we already have a child, and she's absolutely wonderful. Oh. And she listens to podcasts.
Does she? So.
But I tell you what, she does listen to podcasts because the.
Oh,
here she comes.
Did you say it in the podcast?
Yeah. You may notice that white wine bottle is empty, and that's why she's got to get up now. Refill, she yelled at the top of her lungs. I do know she listens to podcasts because me and Frankie Boyle did. We didn't call it a podcast. We called them comedy albums because we're that kind of prick. It was called Freestyle, and Frankie was her favorite comedian, and then she started listening to that, and on her birthday, her best friend tweeted to me and said, you're my best friend's favorite comedian, could you say happy birthday to her? It would mean the world. And I tweeted back. I said, I don't do things like that. And then I looked at her pictures. And I made an exception. Just once I checked the pictures out, made sure they were her. Because that's how attractive this lady is. Her pictures have been used in fake. Her pictures have been used to catfish people before.
It could be a very elaborate catfish.
I'm sure it still is.
Someone just wearing a mask of that face. Going to pull that off.
Yeah, I got to get my eyes checked. This is...
You've had your child, and now you've got to give us your money. Damn.
Yeah, that's like a reverse kidnapping. We've created a child, and you have to pay for it. So meta.
It's kind of romantic. It's lovely, isn't it? It's sort of romantic and...
It is, but because we did so many of these, I realize she knows a lot more about me than I know she knows about me, because I just, you just blabber. You don't think anyone's listening on these things, but some people are.
I have that problem. I keep on meeting people and talking to them. And I tell them something that's happened to me recently, and I can sort of see their eyes going, and then I realize I write a blog about what I do every single day. And anyone who reads that blog is going, yeah, I know all about the stone clearing, Rich. Don't tell me that again in massive detail. So you started as a stand-up in Vancouver.
That's
true.
I believe
is in a country called Canada.
Still. And unless something crazy has happened. I don't know. I haven't watched the news recently, but it was in Canada when I left.
And 95, so you've been going for 20, is that 22 years, 3 years?
Well, I didn't go to university. How the hell am I supposed to know? you're the big smarts guy. I don't know. I just walk around doing comedy. I took a lot of drugs.
I think it's 23 years ago, so you've been stand up for 23 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
What drew you in? What were you doing before you were doing stand up?
It used to be the one nice story I had about stand up, because as you said, I've been a bit of a rollicker, hellraiser. But the one nice thing you could say about like what got me started, when I was 12 years old, my parents took me to see a stand up comedian, and before that I'd wanted to be like a wrestler or, whatever. But then it's like, I want to do that. That was incredible, and I was always able to tell it in any environment like this with lovely people around, and they'd all go, oh, well, maybe he's not such a bad guy. Bill Cosby. And I only remember half the concert.
But that must be true of so many people, especially in America, of that generation, that they saw this guy. It's such an interesting and terrifying
then he case. Slowly faded to black. I didn't mean it like that.
You're the most racist guest we've had since last week with that Toby Addo. the most racist man I've seen. But you've become, I mean, I know in your act you say you're English quite a lot. I don't know if that's just to ingratiate yourself with the English.
Yeah, I'm sucking up at that point.
But you've lived in England. I don't know, are you living here now?
I am. I live in Essex.
Yes. Very nice.
Oh, yes.
But,
I live in Chelmsford beside the prison. I do. I drive past the prison. Every time I come home, I have to drive past the prison, and it's always like, no matter how bad the gig's gone, I'm just like, well, It's not too bad, is it?
But you're a real touring comedian. I mean, that's what you. I mean, I was talking to you about this backstage, and I saw a show of yours a few years ago now, and it's you're an amazing stand-up. What I like about your stand-up is the use of language, I think. I think you've got loads of great jokes and that still surprise me as a comedian, which is...
Thank you.
Always good and very rare. But also I just love, for example, in you do a routine about drunk Glenn versus sober Glenn, which But it's like a routine I've seen other people attempt to do, but yours is much better. And in that routine is the line, drunk Glenn... can see the inner beauty of Rubenesque woman. And that's not the kind of thing that most stand-ups would say. You know what I mean? For you to come... And there's lots of... Within that routine, which is about, the difference between being drunk and sober and who the sober person decides to drink, but the drunk one will have sex with different people, which is a sort of thing that's been observed before. It's just that it's the language. You talk about the sort of diamond in their chest and all this sort of thing. It's incredible... incredibly articulate is the word I'm looking for, struggling to find, ironically. is that a conscious decision, or is this just how you are?
Yeah, I think it just comes from, the way I write material is, there's just a lot of driving in this game, and... I put on usually the classic FM radio station, no words, which is perfect, and you just start thinking about the bit. And I think it's when comedy is at its most fun and at its best is when you're creating this thing and you're thinking about every little angle and how you can tweak it and sort of painting a picture with the words, and that's yeah. And again, it's just about fucking fat chicks, but but how can we say that?
But is the poetry of the gutter. I think that's always appealed to me about comedy, is people who can combine those two things. Is about life is dirt and shit and disgusting things happening, but you can make it beautiful through language and make it funny through language. I think just a lot of comedians wouldn't bother thinking, how can I make that, that line isn't going to necessarily get a big laugh, but that's going to make people go, oh,
Yeah, well, it's also, it's a way to include everybody, because with that subject matter, there's nobody that doesn't really know what you're talking about. It's about, what you're like when you're sober as opposed to drunk. So it's already quite a common ground for people. But if you can add little references like that, then there'll be people that we could go, Oh, I can laugh at this too, because that was actually quite an arty reference.
So. Well, it's true, but that's. I think because you are sort of seen as being quite wild and not angry exactly, but it's a very, your performance is
shouty.
It's shouty.
I just came from the comedy store down the street and got here just in time, and I was in my last bit. I was getting it all revved up, and a woman just right when I started just looked up from the crowd and went, "Would you shut the fuck up?" Honestly. So I might have been a bit too shouty tonight.
Yeah. Or she just misunderstood what stand-up was. I mean, did you not get the contract we have here? Sorry.
I did bring up to her, I'm like, I can understand someone not liking the sound of my voice and not liking me. Coming to one of my performances probably wouldn't be a place you'd enjoy yourself.
But you're touring your own shows, and you write. Yep. You write. It seems like a show most years. Is that
every second year every now? Second year, yeah. Yeah, it's too much work to.
You've done a couple of best. Is your new tour another best of?
Yes, it is. Wool's Gold 2, The Iron Pirate. Some of the people get it.
There's a little subtle joke in there for anyone who.
I went back and did a best of show like a couple of tours ago. So how have you found going back over you? Because you've done this once before as well. Whoa. So how do you find going back over the material, and how do you choose? And is there stuff that you feel like?
Oh yeah, there's stuff you can't say anymore. And there's some stuff that I look back and I go, well, why did I feel that way? But You can't get two. And it's funny the bit you brought up, because I had to go back over all this stuff, and there was one part of that, and of course this is like 10 years ago when I wrote it, but I said like, sober Glenn meets transvestite and he thinks it's disgusting. Drunk Glenn, however, that's a little way of saying that I would loosen my morals. But I just think now, like, you can't say anything close to that amplified anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think in the last, there is a sea change happening. I think in taste, and I think it will. I feel always it's a pendulum. And tastelessness, and things will get too tasteless, and people go, "Oh, we should go back the other way." And then things have got a bit bland. Let's go back the other way. But you know, things do change.
No, and I never meant it. I never meant it out of like anger.
But I don't think that bit is, because that bit's about you saying that you would have sex with the transvestite, but you have to be drunk to do it. That's actually quite. If you were looking at it in one way, you would go, "That's a positive."
Yeah,
you would, because most people would say, transvestite, but you're kind of going, actually, the real me underneath all this would have sex with the transvestite.
Yeah, yeah. If you looked at it through the best possible eye, if you looked at it through a mother defending her child,
I just think,
in a court of law,
I think, because so much of this stuff, the problem is nowadays lines get taken out of context, as this probably will, and will probably. Neither of us will ever work again after this now. But comedy works in a different way, and certainly as comedians, because it's about whether you trust the person, whether you like the person. If someone says, you know, you've made a career of saying, and as so have I, of saying a lot of outrageous things with a nice little cheeky glint in your eye. We like you. We know you probably don't mean it.
Yeah.
We know that there's an honesty beneath it all that means that there's a vulnerability to you as well. That is different than someone shouting hate speech, you know, because comedy isn't about that. Comedy's got about is making us laugh together about things in order to be inclusive, I think, at its best. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's weird that someone could take a thing like that out of context now and go, "Oh, you can't make a joke about."
Well, I mean, the funny thing is no one. I took it out of context. I was the one who looked back and went, "Oh, I'm offended at me." But I could see, like, yeah, because it is on the internet too, and it's when it was. I did it in the gala for the Melbourne Festival, and I mean, it's got a lot of hits. People have seen it. No one's got in contact with me, but yeah, I don't think you'd say transvestite nowadays, even. But I don't think you'd say. I would never say they're disgusting.
No, but it's about, I think it comes back to you, but I think there is, you know, I think there's a sea change. I was talking about this at a book event the other day, and it's not all bad, right? In fact, most of it is really, really good, and I think the way comedy's changing, it reminds me a little bit of in Britain when alternative comedy came and took over from, you know, the working man club. The Comedians, there was a show called The Comedians, which everyone
I know what you're talking about.
Racist jokes, and you know, and I used to watch that as a kid, and everyone loved that show. But you look back and you go, "Oh my god, how did they say any of those things?" So, alternative comedy came in, people pretended to be feminists, but were paying Dawn and Jennifer much less than the men were being paid, you know, things changed in a positive way. I feel that there's maybe a shift in morality again that maybe some comedians are going to have to deal with.
Do you know what I found kind of funny? And it's a lot of the punchlines right now. If you want to be sort of liberal edgy, it's the punchline is straight white male. Like if that, you know, whatever the joke is. Which is fine. I mean, it's okay. Like I'm not offended by that in any way, but. I think there's a possibility that I don't think everyone's seen yet is that, yes, you can do humor like that, but if the next generation looks at that, and because it is, by definition, racism, the next generation might look at the people who do jokes like that and go, "No, they were just racist." And they'll have to defend themselves the same way that you defend, like, the people who defend the comedians. Like, "It was just a joke."
Well, but that's... But then people in the 70s would go, "That was just a joke." You know, and there was something more going on. So I think a lot of these changes are good. I think, weirdly... I mean, I think you're a very interesting case as a comedian, because I think, and within comedian circles, you're seen as being one of the best stand-ups working in the world, because, you know, and you are, you're a fantastic stand-up.
Yeah, thank
but
you.
Maybe out in the world of, you know, people sitting home watching TV, you're not that well known, and you know, you're not as successful as, I would say, why are some of the people successful and Glenn Wall's not so successful?
There's a long list. I know why.
But maybe, you know, I think there's you're a live comedian, and you that's part of it. You know, you couldn't really lasso that spirit and put it on TV really and make it cleaner. It's because there's an honesty and there's a dirt and there's a...
I think it's the key now is to just sort of not even go after that. Just put stuff on the internet and just do the tours, and you know that's enough.
I think it is enough. And you can tour, which a lot of most comedians can't do that. So
yeah, I mean the plus about being on television is that a lot of people see you, but what you don't see is behind the scenes. There's about 9 people telling you not to do 9 different things, and then you just think, well, is it worth it? You know, it's just 9 different opinions.
Yeah. Well, so we've got that freedom of doing stuff on our own, but then there's this, I mean, I think it's just, there's an interesting feeling in the air, I think. I mean, it's not just about comedy, it's about everything. Yeah. I think it's good. It's good that feminism is happening in a proper way in the way.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then it's good that more than half of the new comedians coming through are female. It's good that someone like Hannah Gadsby is able to share her experience with the world. It's good that white men get some payback for the centuries of being on top.
Yeah.
So all those things are a positive thing. But I sort of feel there's this. I feel like there was a Mary Whitehouse in the UK before your time where you lived here.
I know who you're talking about.
Who would write to the BBC if anything was rude was on TV. And it was a joke, and everyone who was a normal human being was against it because it was censorship and it was crazy. And it feels a little bit now like Twitter and social media has become like everyone is Mary Whitehouse. This thing has offended me without any thought about what the meaning behind it is and what the spirit behind it is.
Yeah, well, it's the odd thing about the internet is where it's sort of the ultimate freedom of speech, and without any sort of reasoning, we've decided to stop it ourselves. No, there was no government saying, oh, you know, everybody just attacking each other like zombies.
Got a question about that. So it's,
Yeah. Some people at home are like, zombies don't attack each other, Glenn.
Well, we've gone.
That'd be a very, very quick zombie outbreak. 2 of them got it and fought.
Now, let's talk about Canadian comedians, because all the Canadian comedians I know who come to the UK are all insane.
This is our Isle of Wight.
You seem the sanest of the mad Canadian comedians. Do you think?
Yeah,
that's,
but
think
that's not hard.
It isn't. It definitely is not hard. Well, I think there is that sort of. I mean, Stuart used to take the piss out. Well, sorry, Bacon Face.
Oh yeah.
Stuart used to have a sort of parody Canadian comedian.
And yeah,
there is a sort. Is there a is. Was there not sort of macho, but there was a fun loving kind of drug taking culture going on? Is that fair to say? Is that something that's specifically Canadian, or just happens to be the Canadians who've come? Here?
Yeah, I think it was probably it's tough to get into America if you have drug charges, but a lot of us had parentage. And heritage visas for here. That's not. I don't have any drug charges, but I think it was one of the things. Those like all those guys who came over would be less likely to even want to go to America. I mean, we all tried it at different times, but Canada's a sort of a. It didn't have to be a small circuit, but it was, and you just tend to leave if you get good there, and this. England was much more up for fun, than America was. Yeah. Like, you go to America, like L.A., two beers. You need to get yourself into a meeting, sir, because you're an alcoholic. Two beers, it's just, yeah, well, it's the morning. What else are you going to do?
You do routine about Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you ever really do alcoholics?
I went once, yeah, but I realized I didn't have the problems that those people had. Those people, no. But also, and I don't want to make fun of a whole movement, but I could see they were sort of were like comedians where they were one-upping each other with the stories. And I started thinking, I don't know if any of these really happened. I think these people just don't have anything to do on a Tuesday afternoon. That's not true. but I don't know why this reminded me of that story. My brother got married in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. It's like, and my mom was from there, but we didn't live. He'd moved back there, so I ran into his wife on her hen night, because we're all in town for the thing. And there's this bar that's been there since my mom lived there. And they were all going to this bar. And I said, it was called like the Gold Range or something. I was like, Mom, you should, you know, it looks like the party's going to go to the Gold Range. And she's like, oh, God, the last time I was in there, I stuck to the floor. And I said, well, you should come. Maybe get your shoes back. And she said, what makes you think it was my shoes? I don't know why I thought of that.
It's good. It's good to hear.
I told it at the wedding too. Yeah.
And I saw you sort of being interviewed, and I don't know if this is a true story because it feels too good to be true, but you lived in London for a while and then you were touring, so you moved out of London, but you needed to go and stay in a hotel in London. Is this a true story?
No, this is true. This is totally. I came back to London after I'd moved away. I needed a hotel, so I just put my dates in, and a hotel it was a 3-star hotel, but it was way cheaper than any other 3-star hotel in London, and it was right beside where I used to live. So I was like, I know that hotel. That's a perfect hotel. I'll book in there. Perfect. And then a week passed. And I just started thinking, why is that hotel so much cheaper than all the other hotels? So I decided to read the reviews or whatever.
Yeah, TripAdvisor.
Yeah, TripAdvisor reviews. And every review was like, don't stay here. This is the worst hotel I have ever been. And I called the front desk. But they said there's nothing they could do because it's coming from one of the complexes next door. This guy's up all night watching hockey. Who watches hockey in London? I was going through my divorce at the time. And you talk about the drug, like, there was a lot of drugs going on. And hockey doesn't even, it starts at midnight here, and the West Coast game starts at 3 a.m. So, like, from midnight to 6 a.m. Yeah. I disprove karma.
It's so crazy. You get a cheap room because of you. Yeah. You've ruined that business.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept it down when I was in there, though. I sort of spoke with an accent, like, yes, give me room. I didn't want somebody. The voice is back!
He's left. They're in. Yeah. Now we're under new neighborhoods. So we have got a weird. We'll tell our weird story because in the early 2000s, I was asked to write a film based on one of Glenn's routines, and I was going through. We were talking about backstage. I was going through quite a bit of a dark time where I just split up with someone, and I'd moved to a house where I was meant to be living with them, and I was on my own, and I was writing a book about penises. I was going a little bit mad anyway. And then you'd got a routine about having like an unusual spot appear on your penis.
Yeah, just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Don't laugh at me.
And so you'd had to go to the...
I went... This is the thing. I showed them. Like, I went to STD clinic, you know, bread and butter. And I was like, what's this? They were like, well, I don't know. I was like, how many dicks do you see a day? You don't know? And I was like, I was all disappointed in them. And then they're like, yeah, we got to take a little biopsy off that. I was like, what? Yeah, they cut a piece of my wiener off and put a little stitch in it. It looked like a bow. Like, you know, like when piglets win prizes at the fair. But yeah, and then they said, well, we don't know what it is, but you better call everybody you've been having sex with and tell them. I was like, all right. And the guy, you know, this is back in my wilder days. I had quite a little black book going on there. And I was calling all these girls and I was telling them, like, I don't know. I tried the little piglet story. No one was biting. But it goes to show you about the loose morals of these women. Almost every one of them who I called up went, okay, well, I'll get that checked out. What are you doing later? It's like, I just called you and said, we don't know what it is on the end of my penis, and all you can think about is, oh, he's a nice, honest man.
And you had you weren't able to use it, but that was when, so the routine went
to that
level.
Well, yeah, I wasn't able to do anything because that's what they told me too. Like they put and I would have been, what, about 25 at the time? 20,
right.
Yeah. They put a stitch in my penis and they went, okay, don't get an erection for a week. Well, I guess waking up's out of the question. Like, I had to take the bus home. How was I even? Look to the fellas for that one. 25 years old on a bus. You kidding me? There's no way. No way. And then I ended up, I was so... Like, and again, I'd been talking to all these girls, so I was really, like, horny at this point. And it had been about 5 days, and I thought, I need to masturbate. I can't help myself. I've still got this stitch, but I'm sure I can work around it. And it just about worked, but I popped the stitch, and I sent like a blood, and I freaked. I absolutely panicked, and I called an ambulance. That's what I love about the NHS. Who's this wanker?
So we're going to write a film together about this. Because it's a very, it actually turned out.
I think you'll find the film writes itself.
Someone subsequently did basically the same thing about having this mysterious thing, but also having to tell all your previous partners. There was a show called Scrotal Recall I was mentioning about. So I wanted to call this film. This was relevant at the time. I don't know who I did last summer, and should have sold it on its own.
The show I wrote about it in Edinburgh was called The Bizarre Cocktail.
But I was writing this film and struggling to write this film and struggling to get through my personal life. And I was in the bath as I was, you know, trying to build up to writing this script. And I looked at my penis and there was a spot on the end of my penis. Right, and I was actually I was still in the relationship. It was just before I moved the house, and I was in a relationship at the time. So I thought this is weird, and I thought this is exactly what happens in the film. That's odd, right? And maybe am I imagining it? Is it, am I going a bit crazy because I'm writing a book about cocks and writing a film about cocks? So I went into the clinic, and the bloke went, "Yeah, I don't know what that's something, but I don't know what it is." So exactly what happened to you. Said, "We're going to have to take a biopsy from your penis." So as I was writing this film about this happening, I then had the exact same... I mean, it's taking research to a new level. So I had to have the same thing that happened to you. I got the same thing. They cut a bit off. There wasn't much to lose. And put a black stitch in it, exactly the same as that, and sent the little piece off to be analysed. And so it's just, I felt like I was going crazy. And also I was thinking, I can't even use this as a comedy routine because Glenn Wool has done this. It's just going to be like, going to say, "You just copied it. He told you it to write in the..." So yeah, I really felt like I was
pull
going,
your dick out every time somebody accuses you of plagiarism. Look at the scar. No one would do that to themselves. It happened twice, all right?
It was just such a bizarre thing to happen. And then for me, I didn't pop the stitches because I'm made of strong stuff.
You just don't take as long.
But they told me that the stitches would fall out by themselves, and then they didn't. And they said it'd be 2 weeks, and I waited about 3 or 4 weeks and went back in, and basically my penis had fused around the... So it's pretty bad. Turned out not to be a sexually transmitted thing at all. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, mine wasn't either. Mine was called lichen planus. It's just a skin condition.
Lichen, isn't that werewolves, like lichen?
Yeah, probably.
Your penis is a werewolf's penis.
Yeah, that happens too. I didn't want to tell people about that.
the moon comes out, my penis turns into a wolf's penis. The rest of me is the same. It's quite hairy, a little bit stubby.
Yeah, well...
Probably like a lipstick,
really,
I imagine.
Doesn't really affect my life. My dick gets hairy and then it's not. Can't really write a movie about it.
But yeah, so then I got sad and didn't write the film. So I'd like to apologise to you for... That could have been the moment that everyone realised how amazing you were. Could the big film...
Oh, yeah. Could have I been forgot a about that. Yeah. It's this could have fault. Been my podcast.
No, yeah, that's a sign of failure. No one let me on the telly, so I just have to do this myself. Is it true? You do a routine as well about going to Hollywood. Did you go to Hollywood? Were you sort of fated?
I did. And it worked out. Yeah, it was right after my divorce, right when I was living, making all that noise in that apartment complex. I got signed to a big agency and management and had the whole thing ahead of me. But my God, I do not like America. And I could... thank you. Yeah, I act like in the show things didn't go very well. They did. They went really well. But I made a pilot for the History Channel about how people got rich. And go and interview rich people. And I liked it. It was interesting to me. And the people who made the show were like, "Oh, Glenn, we've never seen the channel head be so happy with anything. My Lord, move to Los Angeles, boy. Your millions are coming." And a couple of weeks went by. It got real quiet. And then they were like, "Oh, I don't know. He really changed his mind."
And I was just, yeah, I was really sick of America by then. So I just moved back to Canada, and that's where I thought I was going to live and die. But I was coming over sporadically to do that podcast with Frankie. A little lady was listening. So, yeah, I fell in love with her and we had a kid and I moved back here.
It's sort of interesting. I've read a review by Kate Kostick who said the same thing about me when I did shows about falling in love and having kids, that certain people in, like reviewers and I think some audience think, oh, if a comedian settles down and is happy and has children, that they kind of lose their edge, which I don't think has happened to you.
No, no, man, no. Well, yeah, I tried to, but it's just the way I'm wired up. It wouldn't matter what was happening in my life. It's just like I've just got a dark sense of humor. So
yeah, I have said this before, but like people when I was going to have a kid, I used to do, you know, as 10 years ago, lots of us did a lot of jokes about paedophiles and paedophilia, and like loads of parents go, no, when you have kids of your own, you won't do those jokes anymore. You won't find those funny anymore. And I thought it was ridiculous. Then I had a kid and I found out they're right, because now I've got a kid, I've realised paedophilia is really bad, isn't it? I didn't realise before. When it's happened to other people's kids, who cares? You know? It's awful. But it's like, you know, it doesn't change. It's clearly changed you in like personal ways. I think, you know, you look a lot healthier, I think,
yeah.
and you seem a lot happier, and that's you know, and I love your. I mean, I see your posts on Facebook, and you know, as any father is, you're loving, and coming to fatherhood a bit later, as we both have. It's, you know, it's an amazing experience. Are you glad? Because I've talked this about people who have kids early and versus people who have kids late. Are you glad you've left it relatively late? You haven't left it late
yeah.
as me.
But. Yeah, oh, I would have been a horrible father. Like in my 20s and 30s, I just would have been like, what do you want for dinner? Cake? Yeah. Let's have cake. You should drive. I've had a few cocktails. Until we find out what's wrong with my dick. Yeah, no, I did it. And who knows if this would have been the way if father had happened sooner in my life. But and I'm new to it. My kid's 10 months old. But what I find is almost immediately... I don't feel like there's anywhere else I'm supposed to be. I don't have fear of missing out. I'm like, I prefer to be at home with my family, and that, you know, if I never set foot in a bar again, I don't give a shit. It's just, and that was just one of those things that just sort of changed.
Sure.
Like that.
And do you find it hard? Because you are touring all over the world when you tour, aren't you? So do you find that hard to, have you done a tour while you've, in the last 10 months?
I stayed pretty local during the pregnancy and up till now. I've been starting to go off and do other things, but she's a airline stewardess, and she's going back on the road. So it's going to be me and the little guy for some times when she's going to go off and tour the world, and I don't care about that. Yeah, like I love it. You know, just stay home and tickle a baby all day. Yeah.
Wait till you have two. it's my son's first birthday today. Fuck him. Fuck him. I wouldn't have done this if it had been my daughter's one. I loved her. She's great. It's a dick. It's a fucking dick. I hope he listens to this. Fucking monster. It's amazing how the difference, because you do, you're sort of so worried and they're so fragile, and you're so worried about everything with the first one. And the second, we take Phoebe to hospital every time she fell over and bumped her head. Oh, take her to hospital. The other day, he had one of those little seats on it, you attached to a chair, you know, right. So it's not like a baby seat, but it's like it's strapped onto like a normal chair.
At
the kitchen table. And he's been rocking back and forth on it a bit, and I've gone, well, it's fine, but just make sure we keep an eye on him and it'll be fine. And I was upstairs the other day and I heard clunk, ah! My wife screaming. And he'd fallen off. The chair had fallen over and, you know, he looked, we shone a light in his eyes, he was all right. So it was the day before, it was yesterday actually.
Yeah.
Go, I nearly made one. But it's longer than I thought.
See, for me, it's like he can stand up now. But he can't walk, like it just like he hears the anthem or something, like just rises. And I know that once he pieces it all together, it's gonna be hell. But like just right now, it's really fun. But I said it's sort of like him being able to stand up and look around. It's like seeing the raptors learn how to turn the door handles.
It is. It's a nightmare. It's a living nightmare. It's just about. It's just about worth it.
I like it. and you know, here's the thing too. There's this market in Chelmsford, and there was this lady. She sells old theater costumes, and I was walking past it, and there was a toddler's Henry VIII costume for a fiver. And I'm not the kind of guy who can walk past that. Okay, so I get $5 out, and now we got the kid home. We got him dressed like Henry VIII. Took his diaper off because it looked weird with a diaper. And we were laughing so hard. It's got like a little hat and everything. It's got, and Alex was like taking a picture of him with her phone. And we were laughing so hard that we didn't realize until afterwards where she was, like, going back through. She's got one of those iPhones that if you take the picture, it does the movement on either side. He actually took 3 steps. He took his first steps dressed like Henry VIII, dick out. Yeah, I was like, I hope this is what you've been waiting for.
All right, we'll ask you a couple of emergency questions. It's been, thanks so much for doing this. I know you've come from another gig.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's kind of weird. What I love about comedians, I was talking about this to Ed Byrne, is just like you don't see each other for 4 or 5 years and then you just pick up from where you were.
Yeah.
It's kind of really odd. I don't think there's anything quite like it, really, with it. It's just, time. Well, time passes by so fast, doesn't it? Ridiculous. Fucking hell. I'll ask you this one. I don't know which one it is, but I want to know your answer to this question. If you had to be in a human centipede with 2 other people...
Well, I didn't have to be.
You have to be. You're in the middle, but you get to choose who goes at either end. Who would you have in front of you and who would you have behind you?
Alive or dead?
Well, you're alive to begin with. Okay, I think you'll die fairly quickly. But your last hours will be spent eating the shit of the person.
Do I have to pick two people?
They can be dead, yeah.
But you want 2 famous people. I can't just...
It can be anyone you want. No, you can answer however you want.
Well, the lady who told me to shut the fuck up...
Behind?
She's behind. And now I got it. Whose
shit do you want to be, consuming?
Gordon Downie. I miss him.
Oh.
He's the lead singer of the Tragically Hip, and he died 2 years ago.
And I can think of no...
I want him from 2 years ago.
I can think of no finer tribute to a man.
God, it'd be confusing for him. Like, oh, you've reanimated me. Can I sing my beautiful songs again? But first. You're going, but first.
Somebody, and I forget, somebody Somebody on Twitter, and I forget who, I apologize, has found the solution to this problem in that you can choose to have someone in front of you who has a colostomy bag. I'd rather be eating their shit, thank you, than it going in a bag that I can see.
Well, I'll take Gord Downey right now, then.
Let's see what we get. Let's see if we get a random question that'll lead. I'll ask you this one, because this might appeal to your poetic soul. What is the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire?
A sword that had obviously been used in a crime.
Wow!
This is Canada. That happens about 3 times a day.
A sword?
Yeah. Yeah, you see, there's a lot of woods in Canada, and the weirder you are, the deeper you go. And if you're in strange moods, you just start. And that's kind of the rule. Like, not, they don't tell you. There's no threat about going deep into the woods. It's just like, well, who do you think's in there? You know? So as a kid, you know, just on the edge of the woods, that's where all the pornography was. And then deeper in, the weirder porn. And deeper than that, the swords from crimes.
Burnt up. Did you see that little Danish girl who'd found a 1,500-year-old sword in a lake she was swimming in?
I heard about it.
It's like, that's an appealing idea, isn't it? The girl lifting a sword out of a lake becomes the queen of Sweden. It's not that good.
It's a lot of pressure on the girl, though. People are expecting such great things of her, and she's just like, "No, I just saw a shiny thing. Don't follow me."
All right, I think this is going to be the question that ends this podcast, and I think we're going to get an amazing answer. You ready for it? I don't think I've ever asked anyone this one. It's 717. Have you ever employed a smith of any kind?
My ex-girlfriend's last name was Smith, but I didn't pay her.
She employed her, though. You did employ her. Well, look, we're going to go and have a drink. First of all, I'll be down in the foyer if you want to say hello, and I can sign you a copy of my book. Please buy them so I don't have to take them. In a way, taking them home might kill me, so if you don't buy the books... I could die. So it's fantastic to see you again, Glenn.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen,
too,
big round of applause. Glenn Wolfe.
Thank you.
Go and see him on tour in 2019. Glenn Wolfe, Skull 2.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle.
Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.